Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
Welcome to Barbecue Nation with JT's After Hours. Conversation that took place after the broadcast ended.
It's Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. That's Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033. 503-982-2033, Barclays, buysellpawn.com.
Hey there, welcome to After Hours on Barbecue Nation. I'm JT. We've got Lene Oxley-Loop. The reason I say that is because, like, the first three times on your show, I could never pronounce your last name. I'd say Loopy, you know, and I'm just being a smart ass.
My married name is Oxley-Loop.
Okay.
And L-O-U-P-E.
Yeah.
Actually, the last name is more Cajun than anything else than Spanish. That's where the... And so it's actually Loup. That's how you pronounce it, but it's just Loup. L-O-U-P-E. So, but Lene Oxley-Loop, Sugar, Lene. Yep.
Whatever.
Tall girl. Whatever. Oh, yeah. I answer to it all.
Yeah, okay, good. Good. I think one of the things... We'll start with this from the After Hours. One of the things that people don't understand... until they've been there, is that the stuff you cook in competitions is not the stuff you cook at home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Amy Mills was on the show a while back.
Love
it's been
Amy.
About a year. And she said, yeah, I can always tell when I've been judging too many competitions because I can't get my rings on and off my fingers, my hands and my feet swell up. And, you know, I mean, the stuff looks phenomenal. But there's so much seasoning and stuff in it that you just kind of go like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. So competition barbecue is this kind of Disneyland crafted, heavily seasoned, heavily orchestrated, put together food. I no longer compete. I retired from competition a while back. I was tired of chasing it. Sugar's to me is a passion and it's also a business. So I do the catering and the lines of products and things like that and classes, of course, but. With competition barbecue, here's the deal. The judge is only going to take one or two bites of whatever you're going to give them.
Mm-hmm.
The rib, the piece of brisket, the piece of chicken, the piece of pulled pork shoulder. So you need to get everything you can into one or two bites. That's it. So if it means amping up the salt, the flavor, the enhancing the overall texture, making it look like it's been shellacked and beautiful and crafted so it almost looks fake, doing everything you can to get that judge to just give you a score, a high score in one or two bites, is incredible. What competition barbecue cooks put in their food, it's not surprising to get that response from Amy or any mm-hmm. other judge for that matter. I don't know how people judge contest after contest. You can't eat that stuff. You can't eat a plate of it. It's so enhanced. It's so phosphated. It's so salted up. That, yeah, you bloat. You feel awful
yep.
the next day if you're really sensitive to all that stuff. I don't cook that way. I hated cooking that way in competition. I was using butter substitutes, and I was using artificial, and I was using enhancements and beef bases and things. I don't use that in real cooking. Why would I, and if you don't use that kind of stuff,
you're not.
I honestly think that you're not really going to have a really good result. You may, in fact, take some awards at contests, but by and large, I don't think you're going to. I've tasted barbecue all over the country, competition barbecue all over the country, not as a judge, but just as a competitor, and just like knowing teams, and they give me a sample of their ribs
sure.
or their brisket or something. Quite honestly, it's to the judge, maybe it's great, but from a pedestrian aspect of it, it's terrible. I would never want to eat a plate of that stuff. It's just so enhanced. It's terrible. In addition, the true aspect of the barbecue aspect is really... it's kind of gone away. People cook chicken in muffin pans and pans with tons of butter, and they're braising and they're sous vide and
mm-hmm.
they're almost confit. The brisket is injected to high heaven, and it's trimmed and it's cooked and it's blasted in a 375 or 400 degree pit, and there's a little bit of smoke coming on. Sometimes there's no bark. The ribs are injected and they're enhanced and they simmer in a tons of sugar and sauces and glazes and MSG and things like that. And the pork is just carved and it's molded and injected and it's just braised and it's dipped and it's glazed. Mm-hmm. And just to get this perfect look, this perfect box. And the boxes look wonderful. They really do. They look great. But as far as from eating standpoint, I'm not surprised to hear that at all. It's just a whole different animal. People ask me about it all the time.
I have judged half a dozen contests, usually as coming in as the cowboy cook celebrity type local thing, you know, like that. And everything you just said is absolutely 100% true. Because you take a bite. And you learn very quickly to take small bites. You don't take a burn in and pop the whole thing in your mouth.
No.
Because you're not going to get that flavor out of your mouth by the time you have to take the next one, you know, like that. And I just, you know, like you said, they look great. The presentation is dynamic. It looks very nice, very, you know, pleasing to the eye and all that. But after about... Here's a little inside baseball for you, kids. After about five or six boxes that you've judged or plates or however they're presenting them to you, they all kind of taste the same, a lot of them.
A lot of times it does. Yeah. It does taste the same. A lot of teams are using the same sort of sauce mixes or using the same flavor bases with their rubs and things like that because they don't, as much as they want to try to think outside the box and do something a little rogue, they tend to pull back and to do a lot of the things that a lot of they're learning in a lot of classes. There's a lot of classes, a lot of barbecue competition classes out there. And for the most part, most of these teams are using the same dozen different kinds of rubs and maybe a half of a handful of sauce combinations that are out there.
Yeah. Because,
and then the judges have done this for a couple of years now and they grow accustomed to the taste. So when you try to break that mold and do something. You know what? I'm going to do something completely different. I'm going to grill this. I'm going to get some grill marks on it, get some char from like charcoal and this and that. Sometimes it works and most oftentimes it doesn't work. The other aspect of competition barbecue is this designer meat a lot of people are using too.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing against the product itself. Wagyu beef is amazing if it's cooked correctly. Unbelievable. High-end designer pork, unbelievable. These pigs, these heritage pigs, and these crossbred pigs that are unbelievable with the marbling and the flavor and what they're eating, and this and that. By itself, the product line is amazing. But you get to the point where unless you've got a ton of money to buy all this stuff, spend $150 on a brisket, spend like $60 on a pork shoulder, but to buy this stuff, it's really, really expensive, and it's kind of a rich man's game. And I'm not saying the other stuff, the more sort of commodity-based things don't work. They do. But a lot of times, these young teams, to get right out the park, pulling out of the parking lot, pulling out of their driveway, they're in at $1,000 or $1,500 just right off the bat, just in their products. And so it's a lot of money. And I think that turns a lot of people away, a lot of young teams away. And so you get these big teams that are sponsored, and they got lots of like disposable cash and
sure.
You know, they can go travel around and they can buy all these high designer stuff just to turn in 6, 7, 8, 9 slices of brisket, a couple of burn ins, just to turn in maybe, you know, a pound or so of pork with medallions from the Money Muscle and pulled and chopped and stuff like that. They're spending a ton of food. And the thing is, you can't just, it's hard to really eat that stuff afterwards, which we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just go home and make a big plate of that food. If you do, you got one hell of an iron constitution because I couldn't do it. I would be bloated for 4 days.
Oh, yeah. No, it's tough. I mean, I actually like judging them.
When judging is fun.
You know, it is fun because I came out of that world out of another sport. But sometimes I think you ought to just have kind of the down-home barbecue competition. You know what I mean?
I agree 100%. Yeah. There are competitions that happen periodically around where they're sort of guinea pig style and the organizer will to supply the meat.
Right.
And you pay. They're expensive to get in, $400 or $500, but you get all your meat. You don't bring your own meat. You get what they give you. Sometimes they have these stipulations where you can't use any electricity, any like artificial draft units.
Right.
Pellet cookers, things like that. It's old school live fire cooking. And that turns quite a few teams away that that they rely on those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's another aspect of barbecue. You know, somebody wants to get into barbecue. I tell people, you know, one of the most inexpensive types of barbecue to barbecues, the cookers to get, and one that will teach you live fire cooking, is just a standard kettle cooker.
Yep.
And they're wonderful. You can get them on Craigslist all day long for $40-$60 or cheaper, especially at the end of the season. And instead of going out and spending $500-$600 on a unit that costs a lot of money, unless you cannot or don't want to use something that has a, you want something easy like a pellet cooker. You just set the temperature and you set the timer, whatever, and then you close the lid and it goes and you come back in an hour and it's done. It just depends on what you want to do. But if people are really interested, especially in classes, if they're really interested in learning the art of live fire cooking, I tell them, I just don't spend a lot of money. Just get a kettle and you can cook a lot of different things on a kettle. It seems sort of elementary and lame kind of sometimes.
No, I think
it's
good.
An awesome, I use my kettle all the time.
Yeah.
And it's one of my go-to pits. I'll be honest with you. I have got a lot of pits, a lot of high-end, very expensive commercial pits. I've cooked on just about everything you can cook on. And I love my favorite people ask me what my favorite cooker is. I love my kettle. I absolutely love my kettle. And so that's just kind of what I like to cook on and teach people on too.
I'm also glad to see like KCBS and some of those acknowledging gas grills, because a lot of people cook on gas grills.
Sure,
you know, there's millions.
There are gas grills. I'll tell you what, they I think they sell more gas grills than any part of the grilling accessory and grilling equipment line. Pellets huge are gigantic.
Right.
I have, you know, for when I started out, I was really kind of against pellets a little bit. Not for anything other than the fact that, one, I didn't know about it and I was stupid about it, but two, it was just sort of the ease factor. It's like, hey, you want to learn how to barbecue? Come on, learn over live fire.
Right.
Learn about combustion. Learn about air drafting. Learn about dampering. Learn about how your pit works. I've used a lot of pellets. I've used ones that are made locally, ones that are made overseas. There's some great lines out there, and pellets are great. I think they have a big place in barbecue. And just like what you said, gas grills, I believe, have a good place in barbecue. And you can make some great stuff with a gas grill.
Oh, yeah.
And anybody that poo-poos it, again, I'm coming from not this pure puritanical, it has to be wood, it has to be. No, I want you to cook on what you're comfortable with cooking.
Right.
I want you to cook on what you can. Maybe somebody's in a condo and they can, or a townhouse, and they can't have charcoal in a blast of fire. They need to have something more electric or gas or enclosed, more controlled with the flame. So in my barbecue classes, especially, I teach people how to do that. The application and stuff, you can adapt to whatever you're cooking on. It's not that you have to cook on any one particular thing.
No.
So, but yeah, gas grills have a place. 100%, I agree with you.
Yeah, I like to see all of it. I'm kind of an all-encompassing guy.
Yeah.
You know, when we're talking competition, that's one thing. But when it's accepting people to come in, you know, and they've got, like I said, they've got some... At KCBS, they've got some gas grill stuff now. They've got kids coming in. They're doing all these different things because there's somewhere between 75 and 90 million people that barbecue in this, in the United States. And more than half of them have gas grills.
I have a good friend of mine, Barry Martin, who is out of just outside of Seattle. He's written a couple of books under the Charbroil. He was with Charbroil for a little while as a representative and an author, and as sort of just this demo guy. And he said one of the most popular grills in the country was a Charbroil, $99 Charbroil,
yep,
little piece of crap Charbroil. But it was $99. It was $100.
Yep.
People drop that in a restaurant all the time. And so it wasn't these fancy schmancy, big, hard to learn how to, you know, hard learning curve barbecue pit. It was just a little, and you hook up your propane gas to it and you hit the igniter, boom, and you got a flame. 5 minutes later, it's hot enough you can cook a steak, piece of chicken.
Yeah, throw your
piece
burger
of salmon on it, or whatever, on a burger, a hot dog, a bratwurst, and they're perfect.
Yep.
And so he wrote a book based on that kind of stuff. And and at the time I was like, I don't know. But coming a little bit, you know, fast forward and having a little more experience in the industry, I will tell you, I 100% believe that. And I don't cook on one, but I'm not against it. Cook on what you like. I tell people with flavorings and with woods, you know, people a lot of times will say, okay, use this kind of wood with this kind of meat and use this kind of, cook with what you like. People ask me what kind of style of barbecue. I don't pretend to be Texas or Carolina or Memphis or California or Arizona. Or I'm just Sugar's Barbecue. I don't try to emulate any other kind of barbecue. I'm not from Texas. I love Texas. I'm not from Kansas City. I love Kansas City. But I don't try to cook like they can cook. I don't pretend to cook like they can cook. I can emulate it a little bit, but I don't try to force feed anybody my interpretation of what that is. You want Texas barbecue, go to Texas. You know, you want Florida barbecue, go to Florida.
Yep.
And I just do Sugar's Barbecue style. And with cooking, it's the same aspect. Cook with what you like. Cook with what you like. Cook on with what you can, what you can afford. Just make sure you have a good thermometer. That's one of the most important things. A sharp knife and a good thermometer.
It'll get you a long ways.
Yep.
Lene, thanks for being on the show
today. Thank you so much, JT.
I appreciate
it. You're awesome.
We'll be back next week with another edition. Tuffy Stone's coming up. Meathead Goldwyn's coming up. To name a couple people that are going to be on the show in the next couple weeks. So you're not going to want to miss those. Have a good week, everybody. Take care.